This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 361 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today, a quick surprise episode. Earlier this week, the Bush team reached out to me and said, hey, you want 30 minutes with Gavin Rossdale to talk records? And I said, bring it on. So we teed it up. We had a quick chat earlier today, and I thought, you know what? Let's go into the weekend with a brand new episode. So today I'm going to be sharing with you my conversation with Gavin Rossdale. He's a really nice guy. We talk about the new album, The Art of Survival, as well as a whole bunch of record little factoids around Bush, as well as the collectible records of the Bush catalog. Now, there's a lot of releases that are not on vinyl, and we get an update on that, as well as some of the vinyl from early in the Bush career when they went by another name other than Bush. Again, if you're a record collector or a music nerd, I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. He's a very interesting guy, very nice, very congenial, and I only had 30 minutes with him, so I made the most of the time, and we're definitely teeing something up for early in the new year. So here we go, a surprise episode number 361 with Mr. Gavin Rossdale of Bush.
Wow, look at that. Amazing. I love that hair. What's happening?
Oh.
Blue. That's great.
It is blue. I do need to get it touched up, but yeah. Here's the deal. I'm starting to go gray, and I figure I could either look like an old man or I could look like a crazy old man. And so...
always go the crazy. Always go crazy.
Exactly. How are you, man? Great.
I'm pretty good. Exciting time. And I'm good, you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm home and...
Where is home these days?
Los Angeles, California.
Ah, got it. All right. So you still haven't lost the accent?
No, mate. No. I mean, funny when people get a soft transatlantic, they stop saying all the T's and Atlantic. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's rubbed off a bit in many ways, but no wheatgrass and no slidey accent.
So, mate, I got to tell you, I've been listening to this album, The Art of Survival. Man, the mood that you're in to be able to create such a heavy album, was this a product of the pandemic? Was there, you know, what was the mood going into the creation of this record?
Survival, you know, and shock and awe. And just that how random life can be and how dangerous it is and it's a really violent world and people lost so much. And so you can either talk about the pandemic, you can talk about what they lost during the pandemic, you can talk about what other people found out about them during the pandemic. You know? So many things happened and people kind of got more in touch with themselves, you know. So I don't know, you know, it's just, I think that when you've, you know, you've been through stuff, whether it's, long-term relationships. I'd gone, come out of a couple of years of seeing someone that has a sort of amazingly spectacular end to that. A few things went down, some things went bad, some bad things happened. And I was just living life, you know, and I don't over-specify exactly my own predicaments because I didn't want to overshadow the record and it would have potentially overshadowed the record. So I just shut my mouth and put it into music. And I think that the sort of the weight of the record and the sort of the heavy, fragile quality to it is born out of just living it and experiencing it. And I think that's maybe, I hope, because it gives me a great direction to the road to go on, to continue on, that when you go the most inside yourself and you get the most far away and you care the least about other people's opinions of what of your whatever you're making, you just make what you make, there is the chance that actually that counterintuitively, or not maybe intuitively, means that people relate to that because it's all about dark, special places in your own head you have to deal with. And everybody has that all day long, you know. Whether it's looking at your partner and being like, somebody kill me. Or if you're looking at your job and you're going, this is not me, or you've been betrayed, or you've been robbed, you know, and you know, you've been attacked. I mean, people, it's a violent world. And so I survived getting divorced, which is a pretty horrific process, either side of the coin, you know what I mean? Whichever side you're on, this is a terrible process to go through. And then you go through life, and it's funny because a number of years ago, I seemed like sailing off into the sunset of, like, you know, domesticity. It's kind of like married, three kids, like, oh my God, I'm going to write about this. But, you know, I did write a song called, an album called Man on the Run, which I guess people missed. But there was plenty of stuff going on when I was married there. But it was weird that I was thrust creatively this last couple of years through some seismic events, that event and other people's illnesses, losing my dad, you know, all these different things that just go in the melting pot of my brain, thought process, daily thing. And of course, you know, I think of a lot about it because people ask me about it, so I have to kind of think about it. The record, you know, I didn't do it. You don't set out to be thematic. You don't set out to...
Well, is there a thread or a theme that goes through the art of survival?
I don't set out like a concept album. Sort of, mm-hmm. So I open my mouth and hope something interesting comes out. Like, open my brain and hope that I'm thinking in a sort of a way that is has an appealing ring to the lyric. You know what I mean? And then I get to the end of the process and I've got the 20 songs or so, and I whittle them down. We whittle them down to 10 or 12 songs. That's when the themes come out, because it's the best songs. It's not like, hold on, what about the song about the climate crisis? What about the song about the little girl who lost her bike? You know, Well, it wasn't a good chorus. No one's going to care about it. It's got to tick all the boxes in a way. And the way that the record fell, and then when I listened back to it, I was like, wow, we've all been through a lot. That is the art of survival. Even to the point where actually I typed in the art of survival into the Spotify to see how, you know, had it been used, because I didn't want to, you know, I wouldn't see someone's work and nick a title. It's terrible.
Right.
But I looked on and I saw a couple of things and a few songs, the art of survival, and I was like, ah, oh, shoot. But I was like, you know what? I totally thought of it genuinely. You can't actually own titles, I don't think, you know? So it's a sort of genuine thought. And if it's just part of the same gang of people trying to get through. And so it was such a genuine, natural title that I just let it go. I was like, yeah, you know what? Yeah. Now, if I'd gone on there and seen it, then I'd be a piece of dog poop, and that wouldn't be so good. But well, it's not cool.
If you went against your instincts, you would have regretted it in the future.
Yeah. That would have been cool. You know, it would have been cool. And so I had no interest in doing it. But
So listening to the album, I mean, I get this feeling of, you know, maybe a hopeful anguish. Which I tend to think is the output. You know, I think humanity's been through a lot the last 5 years. Not saying the previous, you know, 10,000 were a cakewalk, but, you know, there seems to be a period of time where, especially artistically, there is a lot of pressure. And to be able to then exit out of these sort of times, or at least go beyond them, I just thought perhaps one of the only silver linings is going to be we're getting some great art. We're getting some excellent statements. And when I look at, you know, the art of survival, I'm like, okay, this is a commentary on what this artist has been through. And it's really meaningful and it's heavy and it's different. And I don't know if you set out for it to be that way or even if you'd agree with my assessment. But that's
I love your assessment. But, you know, I'm not smart enough to set out and have goals of that, because then it's like you're just trying to exist within ropes that, you know, you lay out, or, you know, so to speak. You just try and be good. Is my, you know, there's a great old line in the studio, you know, we sometimes say, you know, can you just, I don't know, do it good? You know, sort of playing a part. And they're like, it's not quite right. And you say, I don't know how to put it, but could you just do it well? Mm-hmm. Do something where we go, brilliant. Bass, you know, just don't make us think about it, you know, make it irrefutable, you know, it's so funny. But I love making music, and I do think that it's an endless path until, I mean, I would imagine, like I have said before, that the day that you arrive at a point where you know everything, you can do everything, it's probably the day when you stop. It's not, you know, I think it's the pursuit of perfection, or not perfection, but the pursuit of quality. You know, how can I go up against all those great records behind you? You know, there's already great songs. There are too many songs in the world, but there are never enough great ones. You know what I mean? That's it. That's it. That's life. That's our life. That's my dilemma. It's my world. It's like all I hear about is like there's so many songs coming up. Of course, and there are. It's like thousands a week. You can drown in the output that people put out there.
Mm-hmm. So look, I do want to talk a little bit more about the art of survival, but before we do that, this show is about record collecting. It's about, mm-hmm. you know, the music that inspires you, things like that. And I have it on good word that you have quite an interesting record collection. Would that be fair?
I think so. I'm always a bit shy of these conversations because, you know, I'm not like a, you know, some critics of fantastic. Certain people have an encyclopedic knowledge of things and songs. I don't know if I have that. I sort of err on the side of a regular person whereby I have my worlds that I like and I know them pretty good. But there's always stuff to find out about, people turn me on to bands, older bands I didn't think of, you know, new bands. I love it. You know, it's so hard to keep up. And I'm embarrassed. There's lots of bands I know their names, but I don't necessarily really familiar with their work. You know what I mean? Because how much time is there in the world? I try. I mean, like the Mars Volta record has displaced loads of records because I've just been playing that a lot. So it stopped me playing other records. It's sort of like the top of my charts in my house, you know? And it's just funny how that works, you know? So go on. Yeah. Ask me. Go. Sounds like a good question.
Well, let's start with that. Mars Volta. In fact, I've got the box set up there. Are you like when you get into Mars Volta, you go out and you get that vinyl box set? Do you like go on a deep dive with them?
I love, my favorite thing about vinyl and playing on my Lynn Sondag with my vinyl is my whole thing is immersing into it. So my dream way always of playing record is to play it first and read the artwork. My whole life, it began with the artwork. My favorite thing to look at was the thank yous. Who are they friends with? Who are these lucky people who got to be, oh gosh, you know, oh look, you know, it's Springsteen's on the phone, oh man, you know, whatever, like all these friends that they had. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really kind of fun thing. When I did thanks on my records, it was like the most, it was harder than writing the songs, like don't forget anyone. And I remember I thanked, even though years later, my first girlfriend I ever had, my first love, I thanked her because she's amazing. And I'm still friends with her. And she's an amazing woman, just got married, amazing girl, and a clinical psychologist now, scary. And she, I put only her surname and miss, but I meant it in a really cute way. And I got really beaten up for that, really in trouble for that. And I really tried to elevate her by, you know, that didn't go down well. So immersing myself in the music and reading the lyrics is my favorite way of really connecting. It's not just driving in a car and hearing, you know, driving to that, because then you're doing something else as well. No, I like sitting there and just, you know, just diving into it. And that's how you get lost in records, and then that's how you find the records you like. And that's how I still do it to this day on anything. Even if I'm streaming something, I will just find the lyrics. Because this is important, you know, like half the time it's inaudible. So mm-hmm.
What are some of the record shops in LA that you tend to spend time at?
I mean, Amoeba obviously is the main one. All the record stores that I spend time in is Rough Trade in London. Rough Trade in London always was a treat. And going in there, and I knew them all in there, but in a very Malcolm Gladwell-esque way. I grew up from there's a record store called Manzi's at the top of my street. The first place to go. It was a post office on one corner, and then the other side of the street was a record store. So my whole pocket money childhood, everything was always about going up there to get the records. And it was kind of fun because my where I grew up is pretty, it wasn't crazy. It was pretty rough. And, you know, so you didn't, no one liked Bowie. No one listened to The Doors. No one knew anything like that. People built cars. They listened to Lover's Rock, Patrice Rushen, Chaka Khan, you know, soul stuff. So anything kind of off kilter, Pere Ubu, you know, would be the domain of the weirdos. And so I'd have this dual life because I've always been a bit of an art jock, you know. So I was pretty good at soccer. So I'd play with all the boys, you know, and all the skinheads, and I'd play with soccer teams, you know, and friends with them and all that. And I'd go home and listen to like Bowie and Mark Bolan, and you know, my pride would go with them because you get a slap if you're walking around with Bowie's records. It's not really what was, you know. And then they always say, "Oh, you like all the weird birds." You know, the youth club. We had a Jewish youth club called Maccabees, and I used to go there. And whenever the punk girls would come in or go on the dance floor, then I'd go on the dance floor, and then all my friends would be like, "You like all the weird girls?" And it turns out I just liked alternative people from the get-go.
Well, let me be the first to go on record: weird people are really fun.
So great.
So how did you react when punk came into your world?
Oh my God, that's such a great question, because I was just peach for that. Literally, it was a revolution that couldn't happen nowadays. I mean, there's a revolution like no other when I was like 12, 13. It was outrage. There's national newspapers. The Sex Pistols being on TV. They swore on Bill Gundry, so called him a tosser. You know, gave the thing, "Go on, he's gone to." There's this amazing moment where, well, I'd never seen anyone sort of be disrespectful on TV. And these punks, and I remember going up the road and getting God Save the Queen single. I still have all those at my, all the same punk singles at my dad's. And it's actually, to be honest, I found it a bit abrasive, "God Save the Queen." It's just that, I realize now, is that Les Paul, I was just playing it on the record, that, you know, I had the one that goes round and round forever. You know, you put it on permanent loop. It was brilliant. The first ever billion Spotify plays were on my record player, you know, because it just always go again. Unless you stopped it, it would go forever. It's like Duracell. I Pretty Bacon was more palatable, because it was slightly more poppy. It was just a weird thing. I remember listening to it going, "This is what I've got to get involved in. Oh, this is not send me forget me nots." But I just like, now I've got to be part of this gang. And then it was like, then it was the Clash, White Noise. What's it, all the Clash singles, you know what I mean? I'm blanking. White Riot. Mm-hmm. As, you know, and then so I had all those singles. So Can't Stand the Rizzillos,
yeah.
X-Ray Specs, just everyone. Ian Dury and the Blockheads. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about this the other day, like, I've been asked about early vinyl that really affected me, and the Psychedelic Furs, X-Ray Specs was the most progressive band. I mean, they sang songs in 1977, 1979, genetic engineering. I was like, it's mind blowing. You know, germ-free adolescence, you know, all those things. And the most thing that I find really sort of, in a weird, perverse word to use, but sort of precious to myself about that young version of myself, is that I didn't have the courage to ever think that I could make what I was so in love with, you know, make music. It wasn't like I was doing that and then, like, I got, you know, I sort of was a bit of helping my sister's boyfriend be, you know, take his gear to the studio, they'd rehearse. I was in shitty rehearsal rooms when I was 14, but I was just excited by it. And it was only when I was 16 or 17, I was like, "Oh, I don't want to get a job," and I started to leave school. I was terrified of the idea of working and didn't want to go to university, college. I just like, nah, I want life. I'm just like hungry. I want to get on with it. I've had enough. I mean, it's amazing, like sort of dumb and arrogant all at once. I mean, like, what a funny perspective on life. Like, not really trained in anything, bit of a few exams under my belt, and just like, I've got to do it. And then I sit and I write songs with a microphone into my dad's hi-fi. And I knew a couple of guys. I met a guy who was a musician. So I worked with the first person I met, you know, and I'd be like, I wrote these songs. I can't even imagine what those songs were like. But I don't know what I was doing. I don't know what I was doing, but I just was committed to it and try to study my craft. You know?
So the first time you're on record, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is the band Midnight. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you going through that time, being inspired by all these different artists, playing those records over and over, to then having your own record? Exciting.
Yeah, super exciting. And it happened to me really quickly because I really did start late. 18, 19 is when I, you know, really got going and got into a band, and I was like hopeless. You know, I could just manage to play chords, to write songs. All the guy, other guys would play, and I just be a bad guitar player, be the singer kind of thing. And then so I ended up doing music with them, but it was nothing. It was bizarre because I kept on saying, why don't we sound a bit rougher? Like, why can we not sound a bit more like, you know, My Bloody Valentine or something like that? You know, where's the? It's all, I don't know. And I didn't quite understand the guitar player. So they would put the chords to the stuff I was doing. And so I was like, it's not quite right, but it was okay. It was sort of like a bit, wasn't as dark as I wanted. And then I was in a band with a next band with a guy, great guy, great guitar player, but really blues guitar player. And he never let me play guitar in the band because he was very good at guitar and I was very bad at guitar. But it's like the wonderful, you know, whatever, you know, that great line of you know, Mr. Talking Heads, you know, about the better someone sings, the less I believe them, you know. And that's such a great line. And so he wouldn't let me play. And I found out what band, I didn't really, it was rock, but it was too blues based. I was like, not blues. I don't like those 1/4/5s for rock music, for me personally. None of the bands I like do that, you know. And I managed to pop and slide maybe in Bush in the beginning. Somehow I always managed to avoid it, not because I'm really great technician, just that whenever I hear it going to that, those cadences, I'm like, oh no, someone plays a blues lick. I'm like, oh my God. So then I began Bush, and that's when I started to play guitar on my own for myself to write songs, because I was like, you should play guitar, you know, you're not very good, but, you know, like David Byrne says, you know, it's not about, I mean, right now there's probably a million better singers than me, there's a million better guitar players than me, there's a million better programmers, but I can write songs, you know. And so when you write songs, you're slightly protected, you know. Let me do that again, you know, I can play it better, you know. Everyone's like, yeah, you don't give a shit. Is that great George Cukor said about Marilyn Monroe? Like, I can get my Auntie Mabel to show up on time and know her lines, but no one gives a shit.
So as I understand, and I'd love to have you back on the show and go a little bit more in depth, but as I understand, Bush's original band name was Primitive Native, to the point that there was actually records and product produced under that name. Is that right?
We had Future Primitive.
Future Primitive. Okay. Future.
What happened when we were recording the record, it was still undecided. And Brian Eno was in the same studio recording, which is incredible. Every dinner between 5 and 6:30 was like a masterclass. Like sitting there with Brian Eno talking about music and stuff, and he talked about the Future Primitives. And then when we worked with the amazing Dave Carson, I was big on design. I got Dave Carson, and I was driving on the A40, and I wanted to think of the album title on the way to work. And I saw the word, you know, people say, oh, you grew up in Shepherd's Bush. My mum got robbed in Shepherd's Bush when I was with her. She got mugged. They stole money from her. So I always hated Shepherd's Bush. Bush is a dump. Bush, who cares about it? People have been like for years, oh, so when do you go back much to the bush? I was like, no, nah, this is a word. It's nothing to do with Shepherd's Book. So when we did it with Dave Carson, he was like talking to me, doing the design. He's going, moving from the bush is the best band name. You know, you should be. What are you doing? You know, I was like, you're right. You're absolutely right. So it was Dave Carson, God bless him. Wonderful, amazing artist, graphic designer, and a legend. And I haven't seen him since, but I'd love to work with him again. Remember that magazine, Reagan? It was incredible.
Yeah. Okay. So right before the record came out, were there even mock-ups made with Future Primitive on it? Or
no, the only thing that happened is that we had done, we did a 7-inch for John Peel. That's why there's a 7-inch record that says Future Primitive with a song Bomb that went out to try and get on John Peel's show. And before we got any further, we got a different deal, and then we got Dave Carson, and, you know, it's just life is like, I love these kind of stories because it's the happenstance life. It's the sort of the chaos of, not the chaos, but the synchronicities of life that make it so rich. Like, I'm left at this point in my life and happily not believing in much. I really don't believe in much, you know, your spirituality and sort of, and definitely not religion. I just believe in, you know, humanism, sort of like kindness, empathy, enjoying your time on earth, consideration, you know, all the good qualities. It's just, I don't need someone else's framework to be a decent person, you know? And, but I do believe in synchronicities, annoyingly. Annoyingly, things happen and you meet people, things by chance. I just love that. And I miss that a lot about not living in London, in that you could walk across the street and bump into people all the time, and you bump into people, and it's harder. It's an alien concept in Los Angeles. I mean, in restaurants and bars, of course, but
yeah,
it's quite unusual. So I bumped into Eric, actually. I love it when I talk, because half the time I'm this nonsense. Because last night I did bump into Eric Ron, the producer. I was going with my son after his baseball, went to a late night great Japanese, and Eric was going to a bar, Mr. O's. He was going, and so I as soon as I saw him, I was getting out of the car, gave him a big hug, and was like, "Oh man, I keep talking about the record. People really like it. Great job."
Well, you could also bump into a lot of people at Amoeba too. So maybe spend some time there.
Sure.
Again, just to wrap up really quick, and I'd love to have you back on so we could talk about Shellac and all sorts of get into some other areas. But the new album, and actually the last few Bush albums, a little bit difficult to get on vinyl. What are your thoughts about going back and making those available on the format?
And I've never not had vinyl. So that was a real tough thing. And, you know, to be on a major label, it's not the most instinctive move for them. So you have to push for it. And I was very upset that we didn't get The Kingdom on vinyl. And I said that if we get this record right, will they, and they put it on vinyl, will they agree to put The Kingdom on vinyl as a sort of a, you know what I mean? They're going to sell it. You get a bit, but you know, we're probably going to see the money. They're going to get the money. So it's like, just, to be really honest, I do it for the artwork the most. I mean, I do like the sound of a record, of course. But with drive, it's hard when you're driving. And so when you're driving, you can't always have the records. but I just love the artwork so much. And I just think that everyone's, who makes records, their responsibility is to take care of us all in the title, the songs, the order, the art, everything. It's like, it's the opportunity. It's like the attention. I always say, like, you know, the detail is, you know, it's obviously always in the details. And I was talking today about it. They're like, do you want to make it this new one in white vinyl? And I was like, well, I'm happy to make it in regular color, give it the regular status, and then, like, should we want to do something special? I mean, I don't care. It's kind of fun. You get the blue records. I've got a few blue records, and, you know, things like that. You know, I still got the Public Image, the actual box, you know,
the can, yeah,
the film can.
Well, Karen just chimed in. She said it'll be available in March. So hopefully we could have you back when.
Yeah, for sure. And they have agreed very kindly because BMG are great.
Excellent.
They agreed to do the Kingdom as well simultaneously. So that's coming out in the next few months. Yeah, I was in Amoeba the other day doing a piece and it was annoying not to have a record. And I love signing people's records. It's a sign of the deepest love when people get your records. It's the deepest connection to the band.
Well, look, Gavin, again, you've been generous with your time. Thank you very much. We'll wrap it up, and hopefully we can get you back on when the vinyl is available, because I'd love to hear this album on the what I call the proper format.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's nothing beats. There is. I did say you're okay. It's mainly driving, but and there's a machine that's annoying we've got used to. A record, a vinyl, and a great system, you're inside the record. You know?
100%. All right, Gavin Rossdale, the new album, Art of Survival, out now. Be well, take care, and we'll be talking soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
Cheers, man.
Bye.
All right, there we go. My conversation with Gavin Rossdale of Bush. Wonderful guy. Very nice man. He had his PR team on the phone while we were talking. That doesn't happen a whole lot, but sometimes it does. But they chimed in with the helpful information that the new album from Bush, The Art of Survival, as well as the previous release, will be out on vinyl after March 2023. So we're going to get Gavin back on the show. We'll go more in depth of his record collection and all sorts of interesting stuff there. That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.